rather than just the food. I know our patches here, our cat patches. I've never seen her throw up or cough up a hairball. She's had some hairball problems, but we give her those anti-hairball treats pretty regularly. So she doesn't do that very often, maybe once a month. But I've never even seen her cough up a hairball. So I guess that's a positive. Bruce, if you want to, let me switch over. I'm going to switch over to my ICOM transceiver. And I am using a D104 with it. With the impedance matching device, built into the base of the D104. So hold on here for a second. And I won't be running an amplifier on it. So instead of 700 watts, I'll just be running maybe about 150 to 180 watts output. So my signal level might drop a little bit. Hold on. This takes me a second to switch over. I'm pretty close to frequency here, but this is a D104 into ICON transceiver. It's a 7700, and I've had this impedance matching device built into this thing for a long time, and it's powered. ICON puts I think 7 or 8 volts DC on the microphone line, and that powers the little circuitry, so there's no need for a battery or anything like that. As long as the voltage from the ICON transceiver goes up the mic line, we're good to go. So this is the D104 on the ICOM, and let me switch back to the KWM2A. We're back on the KWM2A again. So there you go. The D104 is a great microphone, and can be used on all the modern transceivers. It's just nobody wants to take the time to match the impedances, but I think they sound probably better than 90% of the microphones out there, including all the fancy Heil microphones and whatnot. So there you go. So let me cross off Jeff. I don't know if Jerry's going to be back there or not. I've been on fairly active on the air, but primarily all on CW. Okay, I'll see you later. My wife is leaving for work. There's been a lot of guys using a lot of vintage gear on CW lately as well, and that's always neat to hear. I've heard everything from AT1s to SD104s and some of the older Kenwood 520s and stuff like that. So a lot of vintage gear on CW as well, especially a lot of these Stray Key Century Club guys love to use that. And I have a second ICO 720 that I put on CW quite a bit, along with the other S line. So let me get it back up to, or down to Larry. By the way, it's 25 degrees here, and so far we've been very fortunate. We haven't had any snow here in southern New Jersey. I'm sure, Bruce, you haven't had any down in Maryland as well. So we've been very, very fortunate. It's been zero snow all winter, and no complaints from me, that's for darn sure. And I guess even farther up into like Vermont and stuff, and Maine, it's been, they've had some snow, but probably not as bad as it's generally been in some winters. So hopefully the trend continues. I got a feeling we're going to get through winter without any snow at all. I don't see any in the forecast coming up. So down to you, Larry. I mean, up to you, Larry. Anyone else? I got you down in Maryland, Larry. Sorry about that. Again, it's 25 degrees and sunny here. Anyone else in the vintage sideman there from K2FW?
K2FW and the vintage sideman, anyone
S. Very good. Solid top gear on everybody. And Steve, your ICOM 7700 sounded as good as the rig you're running now. You know, I can't give critical audio reports on single sideband with the FX-117 because every, you know, unless the audio is really bad, everybody sounds pretty much the same on sideband. But anyway, and you're still 20 over 9 with the 7700, only about 10 dB less than we are with the KWM2A. So didn't miss a word. And yeah, I investigated and cleaned up the present my cat left me in the other room of the cellar here. Concrete floor, so no big deal, but that's exactly what it was, a fur ball. The other cat, like I said, he's never thrown up. He's coughed a few times. He'll cough, you know, he'll get some fur in his throat or something and cough, but he's never left any presents. I appreciated Jerry's comment. Yeah, that's what we need is amateur TV and transmit our cats throwing up. Yep. All right. Bruce, excellent signal up here. Interesting about the breaker getting tired in your hot water heater. It's carrying a lot of current, you know. It's usually a 30 amp circuit for a hot water heater, 240 volts. I use LP gas here for hot water. I did have electric hot water for a while, but the LP gas is much more reasonable in terms of the cost. The downside is when my hot water heater breaks, I can't just go down to the hardware store and get a new one and replace it myself. Jerry, missed you at Marlboro, but I went. Bruce knows, and Jerry probably too, because they were on the AWA top band net on Monday night. But Steve, I went down to the Marlboro Mass Hamfest last Saturday. Kim stopped by, drove down here, spent the night, and then we got an early start to the Marlboro Hamfest. Well, not too early, but early enough. And just went down mostly for the social event. I didn't buy much. I bought three tubes and some Jones connectors. That was the extent of my purchases. And then we had an AM lunch afterwards, AMers lunch, at a nearby pub. And we got back probably about in the area, about 5:30 p.m. Then Tim spent the night again before he took off to Skowhegan. And his car is a previous police cruiser now. He bought a Crown Vic police cruiser at auction, I guess. And it had developed a leak in the power steering line, so he was adding fluid. He was losing power steering fluid. And that wore on his mind, you know, whether he's going to make a home okay and everything, but he did. And he told me on the air yesterday morning that he dropped it off and had the problem taken care of. But it was fairly expensive because it was a specialized part and a lot of labor to install it. So let's
see. Next Sunday is the, a week from Sunday is the New England Vintage Electronics Expo, a big indoor show that they hold once a year, usually in early March. And in this case, it'll be on March 1st. So we'll be going down there next Sunday. At least my wife and I will be. Tim may be as well. I'm not sure. He's kind of on the fence about it, I think. So that's probably it out of me. I know Steve wants to get out of here, so I won't talk too long. I'll make this it. So 73, everybody, and we'll talk next Friday, if not before. WX10 and the vintage sideband at NE1S.
They're okay, Larry. NE1S with K2FW, WX10. Well, I got the first half of your transmission, and it was five. You're about, it was fine. You were about S7 down here. Then that noise kicked in, and it totally wiped you out. So I didn't catch the last part of it. Let me just make a comment then on the microphone. Today I'm using the Kenwood 520 Sierra with a D104 microphone. My recollection is that years ago, and it's been years, that I went in and changed the resistor, the grid leak resistor on this rig to make it a much higher impedance. I'm also using the Collins 30L1 amplifier this morning too to put out some power. So I think that's right, but the comments, so I'm not sure what it sounds like, but I had also been working on another D104 for the 530 on 160 meters, and that clearly is not having the lows in it that would like to have. So Jerry sent me some information on using an impedance matching device, quite technical for me. And I noticed right off the bat it required some sort of external power, like 12 volts, and which is not available for the information that he sent. So I'll be looking on AM phone to see if there's something else. Well, I'm not sure if Larry's copying, so I'm going to turn it back to Steve. And Larry, if the noise keeps up, I'm going to have a difficulty time checking in at 9:30. So back to Steve, K2FW, WX10.
That's interesting, Larry. Bruce, this is K2FW. I am not hearing that noise, and I know Jerry mentioned to you that he was hearing it as well. But I have to say that I am not hearing any kind of strange noise or anything of that nature on this frequency. When you turn it over and there's just dead air, it's just dead air. I don't hear. I'm not audibly hearing anything, so I don't know. But you're pounding in here, Bruce. You're still close to 40 over on the S meter. You were over 40 at the beginning. Obviously, propagation's dropped off a little bit, and the audio sounds fine. Sounds fine as far as what I can hear on the KWM2. The audio sounds fine. Sounds like there's plenty of lows in there, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, changing the grid leak resistor does help. You want to boost that up, you know, higher value. Some people go up to as much as 5 and 10 megohms for D104s. I don't know what was originally in there. I did that on my 32S3. Don't know if I've ever done it here on this KWM2A. I forget what the value of that resistor is to ground. But maybe I should look sometime. But yeah, on the 7700, I also run a D-104. It's not this particular D-104. It's a different one. The little FET circuit that's built into the base of the D-104 is actually powered by the voltage on the mic lead, so there's no need to put like a 9-volt battery or anything like that. I have seen quite a few of these little circuits on the internet. I have to take a look at the one on AM phone. I think somewhere I might have the circuit that I used saved on a computer. I might have the circuit that I used on this ICOM transceiver, and this is something I did like it's got to be close to 10 years ago now, because I've had this 7700 for a long time. So there you go. But it's not, you know, it's they're not really that complicated, unless of course what you said, you have to bring in some type of external voltage. Most of the time, people put like just use a 9-volt battery, and then every couple of years or so, you have to take the base off and replace the battery. But you shouldn't have to do anything else other than that. So anyway, there you go. It's 10 after 9. I guess we'll close the net here unless there's other comments. Let me just drop it to see if either Larry or Bruce, if either one of you have any other comments. Let's see. I guess I covered everything. I had some antenna stuff going on up on the tower, too. But I won't belabor you guys with that. But it's some... the mast has been slipping a little bit in the antenna rotor clamps, and we have to do something about that, and eventually probably change out the rotor to a larger rotor. So let me drop it if either Larry or Bruce, if you have any other closing comments. This is K2FW.
I've got a couple comments, Steve.
Yeah, fire away, Larry.
Yeah, I forgot to mention the temperature. This morning we woke up to 15 degrees below zero, and I just checked a few minutes ago, and it's up to 4 above. So I think it's the coldest night so far this season. And what else? There was something else. Oh, yeah. I heard Bruce fine, and I'm not hearing that noise that Jerry and Bruce mentioned either. The frequency is nice and quiet, and I'm hearing everyone Q5. Bruce's last transmission was Q5. Bruce, if you want to get on the net at 9:30, use the remote receiver. Use the QIX receiver, maybe. If your computer is in, you have a computer in the shack. Excuse me. All right, 73 Steve, 73 Bruce. And we'll see you both later on. Have a great weekend. K2FW with WX1O in the mid-inch sideband net. Anyone else?
Yeah, okay, Larry. You're still averaging about 10 over 9 here into South Jersey. Of course, Bruce is probably another... Geez, I have to look up how many more miles he is south of me, south and west, actually. But you're still pretty strong here. Not as strong as at the beginning, of course, but still well over F9. And always good audio. All right, take care, Larry. And Bruce, 73s, and we'll catch you guys later. Hopefully you have a successful net coming up at 9:30. Take care, guys. This is Kilowatt 2 Fox Whiskey in Southern New Jersey. Clear the vintage sideband net. Take care.
Yeah, Steve, I wanted to mention, you're too far north for snow. We had snow last night.
You had snow?
Yeah. This storm that came up through the Carolinas, we were on the northern fringes, and so the yard and the cars had a coating of white about around midnight. It's all melted by now, but you're just too far north for snow.
Yeah, how about that? That's weird. That sometimes happens. Usually, like, for example, Pennsylvania gets clobbered and we get rain, but every once in a while, if you get, like, a coastal storm, then we get clobbered, and then inland farther, they get nothing.
Yeah. okay. Well, have a good day, good weekend. I guess today's Friday. And we'll look forward to hearing you maybe Sunday morning. WX10, bye-bye.
Yeah, I try not to miss the AM carrier net. That's always a lot of fun. We've actually had, too many check-ins. So you get down to the bottom of the list, you're sitting there for an hour. And I've heard people complain about that with the AWA AM net as well, where they don't check in because they never get to transmit. So I guess it's too much of a good thing. 73s, guys, take care. K2 Fuzzy Wuzzy, now clear.
Okay, anyone else? WX10. Good suggestion. I think I will listen on the SDR. So let me go do some chores. I'll be back. Anyone else? WX10. See you 9:30. Bye.
Sounds good, Bruce. See you then. WX10, anyone else?
Finding a donut tire and wheel that fit. And it could be that my rear wheels may be the same as yours in terms of size of the brake disc and caliper, whereas the front ones are much bigger. So I think the struggle is to find a spare that's going to fit on the front. Maybe the back will be the same as yours. That's what I'm thinking. So, you know, as a workaround, I would be happy with just a spare to fit on the back. And then, you know, you can do the business of, you know, an extra wheel change if you have a flat on the front. So anyway, if you get a chance, it may be helpful if you can measure, you know, your wheel diameter and the overall width. Overall diameter of the spare, and I assume it's probably a 4-inch thickness, a 4-inch wide tire on there, and maybe I can take it from there. Otherwise, I'll have to run over to the dealer and see what they say. I don't think it's as simple as just ordering one for the car because of the front wheel situation, since I have the performance package with the different size brakes. So, anyway, we'll pick away at that. I guess I'll say 7-3, see everybody back here probably next Friday. I'll be off next week into Long Island, but I won't be taking the Veloster because I can't drive it long distance at constant speed and all that. So, anyway, so I'll be out next week, and Warren will be flying on his own here. But it seems like things have settled down to work pretty well. Over to you. I guess it goes to Rick. WKC2FD, W3HPA.
Let me take it a minute, guys.
Go ahead.
Phil, a quick question. All this talk with the Velociter, are your front and rear wheels the same exact wheels? In other words, if you needed to rotate your tires or wheels, can the fronts fit the back and the back fit the front on that Model N brake?
Yeah, the wheels are the same size, but they're probably sized for the worst case, being that the front has larger brakes break.
Yeah, but I guess the question is, the model number, they're the exact same wheels on all four wheels, right?
Yes, correct.
Well, then there should be no problem getting a donut that'll fit properly to a wheel if you have a flat.
Yeah, but that's true. But you're into the used market or whatever. Hyundai doesn't apparently have one. That's what the issue is, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I guess the person to talk to would be was it Rear Whack, where you get like the place that Rick dealt with his aftermarket wheels that he changes on the Miata and now the Veloster. I gotta believe you'll find a donut that'll fit the wheel in the event you have an emergency, a flat. And Rick, on the zone valves, you found another stuck one. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be worth it. First of all, let me know when you make your transmission. What's the rough age of all these zone valves in the system? It may be time to start replacing a lot of the zone valves with new ones, especially the ones that are easy to get out to sweat in and out. And you don't have to do it. Let them hire a plumber and get it all done in one day. Don't do it, unless you want to do it. But if the thing is stuck, you might be able to free it, and you know what's going to happen. 2 months from now, it'll get stuck again. That ball starts to break down, that plugs the hole, and you can change the upper guts, no problem, but the big deal is going to be the ball in the bottom of the mechanical part, and that's obviously the only way to change that is to sweat in a whole new valve. You may want to start putting new valves in there. Why don't I give it to Bill? I think he has company, and then Bill, you give it to Rick. N2SFT, W2RB.
W2RB, N2SFT. Okay, fine business. Yes. The problem would be in the plumbing section where the liquid goes through the valve. Yeah. Okay. And is Steve still there? Give me a call if you have a problem, and we can probably muddle through it again somehow. You have to, the word tuna is really not the right word for this box with the two capacitors and the inductor. I refer to it as a transmatch, where it actually matches your antenna system to your transmitter or your amplifier. That's my take on that. Interesting. Okay. KC2FDN2SFD.
Let me take it a minute, Rick.
Go ahead.
I just want to try. I mentioned that Jack got in a wheelchair. I was amazed. They billed Medicare $52,000 for the chair. That's what the billing was. And I think if you were off the street and wanted to buy that chair and not have any insurance, it would be about $27,000 to $30,000. Go ahead, Rick.
Ouch. I was going to say 10 to 15. I think Phil had suggested that.
Wow.
That's too much. And, Rich, I think you're absolutely right on replacing the zone valves, but that's a big job. That's going to probably be a few thousand dollars to do all those zone valves. Most of the zone valves, let's see, the older ones were original, and they were from 65, and I think the building was extended maybe 20 years ago. The boiler was replaced about 20 years ago also, when the building was made larger. So I think that's the ultimate solution. And Bill is right. What happens is the zone valves get turned off when the heat gets turned off in the spring, and mineral deposits during the summer form, and when the heat is off, they get stuck in the closed position. The system gets turned on in the fall, and they may move, and when they move, they are stuck open, or maybe they are stuck closed and are not able to turn on. So both situations have happened. But it's the mineral deposits which either on the ball or on the shaft of the zone valve get stuck. And, Rich, I agree with you on tire rack. I really think since the wheels are both the same size, front and back, just finding a donut, which I think is the problem. I think Phil mentioned that a lot of guys on the forum were saying that a donut for a 19-inch wheel with that offset is a rare bird. I think that's what the issue is. So it's just a matter of trying to find a donut that is able to accept the larger offset and the space for the front brakes. And, Rich, I just want to leave you with my theory on the dilemma of the imbalance of the two sides of the balanced output. I believe that the issue is with capacitance to chassis or the design of the tuner and capacitance to chassis relative to the Balun. I got a feeling that the Balun is mounted very close to the chassis physically, so it has a capacitance to chassis. And one of the things that you could try, if you had another tuner, I'm wondering if a different tuner would give you the same result when hooked up to the antenna. So that would be an interesting test to just to prove it. And the other way you could prove my theory is to take the Balun, if it is mounted close to the chassis, usually with a screw through it or somehow clamped to chassis to keep it from moving around, is to loosen up the Balun and uncouple it somewhat or just move it away from the chassis. So that's my theory anyway. Interesting problems. W2SFC, if you're still here, otherwise over to Rich. KC2FD.
W2SFC, still here. I got an idea about the zone valves. I don't know how practical it is, but what happens if in the summer you just turn the boiler off, you left the zone valves open with the circulators running? I just kept circulating. It seemed to me that would eliminate your problem with deposits. I don't know that much about hydronic heating, but that's just an idea. Back to you, Rick. W2RID, W2SFC.
Yeah, okay, W2SFC, W2RB. And Rick, because of the different ages, I would start. I don't know how good a budget does your church have?
That's why I'm doing the plumbing.
Yeah, I figured that. Let me make sure I have it. Well, you know, the boiler, 20 years is if they're a high, you know, high quality boiler, 20 years is no problem. So the boilers are probably in good shape. But I also meant to ask you, how many circulator pumps are there? The B&G, the big ones, the two piece with the coupling shafts, are these the like the Teco 007s, the smaller cartridge type circulators, Brick?
Yeah, one's a Teco. I think it's a Teco. One's a red, and the others are green. The manufacturer is escaping me right now, but there are four circulators and 12 or 13 zone valves and thermostats.
Yeah, I'm more concerned with the size of the circulators. Are they the motor, the two piece, the pump, then the coupling shaft and the motor, or are they the smaller, the new type?
They're the new type.
So that's good. You know, I was going to say that's a big plus. You know, they're interchangeable. Flange to flange, they're identical in physical dimension. You know, it's other than the body size. I'm using the 007 type, the cartridge type. And, you know, it doesn't even pay to stock the cartridge. It's so easy to change the whole thing. The difference is, it's like the zone valve. You buy a cartridge, it's just three-quarters of the price of the whole assembly. Because I keep a spare circulator in stock here for my hydronic system. Do they have city water or well water where you are?
No, it's city water. And the circulators have been pretty good. We haven't had a problem with those.
Yeah, well, you know that a hydronic system wants dead water. It's not good to put constantly flush and put fresh water in with all, like you said, the mineral deposits and all that and the calcium. The deader the water in the system, and especially if it's, you know, obviously you have a regulator from the city side. You have I'm pretty sure by law you have to have a check valve. When your water can only go one direction, they don't want any water fed back to the system. And then there's the regulator that adds the water. You know, years ago you had the glass tube with the valves, and you had to keep the any water that was evaporating, keeping a certain pressure. And they usually, you know, between 12 and 15 psi, and you have that automatic regulator. The deader the water in the system, the better. We're back to you, Rick.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And there is a check valve and a regulator also. You know what there is, though, that I meant to look into? There is a big tank. It must be a 50-gallon...
A bladder in the tank, and there's a little a Schrader valve on the bottom, and you pressure the bladder to the pressure you need, like 15 psi, and the water sits on top, and that's what you know, takes up the pressure as the water heats and cools. It's the better of the two systems. You have the old type system. There's always water in that tank, and I know what you're talking about. It's probably mounted up near the ceiling somewhere, right?
Yep. And I'm just wondering, the idea is to not fill that tank up all the way, I believe. And, the hot water heater at church has the bladder type, and I have the bladder type here at home.
Yeah, you know, when the budget's right, you ought to talk to the elders there. Probably the right approach to this is get a plumber. Yeah, I'm sure you don't want to do all this work, and you shouldn't have to. And the older valves, check them first. The ones, the newer, that addition they put on, maybe those valves are in better shape. Make it a two-step retrofit. But, you're going to need to change all them valves out to newer valves at one point or the other. You know, I'm sticking them. Steve's got a good point. Maybe leave them open and run the circulators a couple days a week during the summer to try it. I don't know if that would alleviate the problem. But and make the guy convert the boilers to the bladder expansion tank. It really isn't necessary. If you don't have air, are you having an air problem anywhere in any of the zones, Brick?
No, not really. And, you know, that's what I was thinking. Just a few times during the summer, just cycle all the thermostats, turn them on, and let them run for an hour and turn them off to cycle the zone valves and keep water circulating and keep those shafts moving.
Well, you don't actually have to run the boiler, the flame. You could lock all the, you could turn all the thermostats on. It'd be a pain in the neck to get up to all them zone valves and move that little lever. Open all the zone valves and kill the boiler, so you're just circulating, room temperature water through all the zones.
Yeah, yep. Either way, with the boiler on or off, it really doesn't matter. Just to run the boiler for an hour or so isn't going to kill us. And it's just a matter of going to each thermostat and turning the heat right up for an hour and shutting them down. But that's an idea.
Well, the most important thing, though, is I want to get a licensed plumber in here and have them go through the system, check all of the safeties, check the flue, and make sure the flue is nice and clean. There's a stack cutout which monitors the stack temperature and then feeds over to the fire alarm system. I want to make sure that's working. And I took a look at the tubes from the flame box there. And, there's a lot of dust and dirt down there, and I just want it all cleaned out, and I want a licensed plumber to sign off that maintenance was done on the system just for liability and safety and something that I may have missed and something that may have been overlooked in the last 5 years.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good idea. And make sure that the right amount of air is getting into the tubes, the flame colors are right, and absolutely clean out all that. If they haven't been serviced in a while, you want to get them to take the tops off the boilers, clean out all the between the pig, all the vents. It needs a full maintenance. You're absolutely right. Let them go through the entire system if that hasn't been done, especially if it hasn't been done in the last 5 to 8 years. And then figure out a plan on the older zone valves, depending on the budget, you start appropriating money, get extra donations, appeal to the congregation that we're going to need, $8,000 to do all this or whatever the case may be, right?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been a struggle to get them to spring for the money to just do the cleaning and the annual maintenance, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, you got the right idea, and it's a pretty big system. You're talking 13 zones and eight. What did you say? What's a three zone? Three pumps or eight pumps? What did you? Was it three pumps? Right?
Four.
Yeah, well, it's fairly large, four pumps. I don't know why Mike hasn't been on here in a while. CWK, have you ever seen, did he ever send you pictures of his hydronic system in his house?
I think I remember. I either saw yours or his, yes.
Well, you remember his. It's 11 pumps.
Wow. No zone valves, just circulators?
Yeah, that's the new way. And now they're starting to revert back. I have to find out about that. The trend was, one big pump and, five zone valves, and then they got away from that and they put manifolds, and then every zone was a pump, which was not a bad idea, because if you lose one pump, all the rest, if you only have one pump running 11 zones, you lose the pump, you lose everything. So it was a good idea when they came out with these little 007 Tacos, and now they're going back the other way. They're going back to high efficiency pumps and more zone valves, and I got to find out why they're doing that, Brick.
Oh, that's interesting. I'd be interested to hear why that is. All right. And how is Taco, by the way? I saw them in the store the other day compared to Honeywell and Beckett.
You mean the zone valves?
The circulators.
I think Taco is the gold standard. They're easy to come by. And now, they make, you mentioned you have the valves, some of the zone valves you spotted, you had gate valves or some kind of valve for it to slow down the flow, to equalize the system, if you know what I mean. You have a small room versus a big room. You want to try and equalize the pressures to each room. They make those Taco valves now, the pumps. There's a standard one that runs at one speed, and you'll notice there's a new model. It has a little three-position rotary switch on it, so you can change the three different speeds on the pump instead of having to put gate or diverters into the line. Go ahead.
Oh, we have one circulator pump that is different than the others, and there is actually a switch on the end of the motor, and that explains what that switch does, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's a speed switch. It changes the RPM. You have three different settings to change the speed of the CFM in that particular zone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and there are what's called balancing valves in each in each zone to, like if there's a very small room that's being fed by one pump and a very large room by the same pump, you want to cut down the flow to the small room. So that's why there's the balancing valve.
And that's a pretty, to do it right, I'll tell you, that's a pretty complex process. My home isn't that big, and I have a, what they call a balancing valve in each line. I have wide open. I didn't mess around with that. That's the way they were. I've never changed that, and we're happy with the amount of heat in each room. But if you have a large building like that, you need some very sophisticated equipment. You can't just go by room temperature. And it only has to be done once, and it's a pretty complex process to do it properly, Brick.
Yeah, and, you know, it's probably not all that critical because if you were running wide open, the room would, the small room would get hotter first and of course, shut off quickly with the zone valve. But to do it right, you're right, the balancing valve would have to be closed down to the smaller room, and that would allow the larger room to get all of that water, all of that hot water quickly and heat up more quickly. So it'll be interesting. I'm headed out there probably in the next 10 or 15 minutes, and we'll see how it made out with this cold weather.
Yeah, QSL. Let me make sure I have it. You know, the other deal, like in my house, when they design a home, where you spend most of your living time, living room, kitchen, dining room, etc., when they design a hydronic system, they make the that zone from the boiler the shorter. You know, obviously there's a starting point where the water leaves the boiler on the supply side, goes through a zone or goes through X number of feet of pipe, and then comes back. And obviously there's going to be places in the home where the distance is the furthest, and they usually make the bedrooms that. Because, you know, you want to have a little cooler. I don't like sleeping in a room that's really hot. Some people like to leave a window cracked and stuff like that. You got to, that all goes into that mix of, I'm sure you have that situation in the church. There's going to be zones where the further zone is not going to get as much heat because by the time the water gets to that, those radiant fixtures, it's not going to be as hot as when it started out. You know where I'm getting, you know where I'm going with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what happens. The zones that are closer to the boiler really get warm quickly, and the other ones don't get very hot at all because of the distance. Yep, there's probably a lot of theory involved that I know nothing about, so I should really study up on this the deeper I get into it. What did you think about my idea about throwing another tuner, if you had one, or borrowing a tuner to see if the same imbalance occurs when connected to the antenna?
Yeah, I have a tuner here. I'll dig it out of the garage. It's the, what was that company? Gee, I can't. It'll come to me. Tentec. It's not a T tuner. It's the two, you know, the roller inductor and one cap differential cap, differential T, whatever they called it. You know, I think it's the Model 130. You're familiar with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I have one of them down in the garage. I'll have to dig it out. To open this tuner and move the ballon around, I'm not going to do that. This is there's 28 screws to get the cover off this thing. It's a pain in the neck. I'm not going to even go there. I think the first thing I want to do is go to Mike's house, W2CWK. He's got the identical tuner. He's using window line. His antenna's a little longer than mine. I have a restriction here. I can only get a maximum of 115 feet end-to-end. And he's got 132 or 136 feet, whatever he's got. But he's going tree to tree, and the ends don't even get near the trees. A good 8 to 10 feet from each tree to the insulator. So it's a free-hanging, and it's fed with 450 line, just like mine. Maybe approximately the same length of line, too, down to the tuner. I would just like to bring my scope there and bing-bing, you know, to see if that scenario exists. And if it doesn't, then it definitely has something to do with my metal pole versus the tree. But, it just doesn't compute. Any of these scenarios, even yours, with moving the ballon away from the chassis and all that, whatever I see in one scenario, turning the ladder line around, the problem should go to the other channel. I shouldn't see two different scenarios, Brake.
Well, I'm not so sure because of the imbalance that is set up with the ballon being close to the chassis. And the other thing I would suggest, if you notice that he doesn't have an imbalance in his system, you may want to bring your tuner over just to make sure there isn't something flaky going on with your tuner.
No, I'm not going to do that. It's way too much trouble to do that. And I'll tell you, you saw the video. My tuner works perfectly into a 470-ohm dummy load.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I'm going to just measure his setup and see what I see. But I think the bulbs, you know, this fellow that came on the other morning, he emailed me back with his ideas. And again, a lot of them make a lot of sense. But again, the problem would go to the other leg. If it's ground reflections and anything to do with what's going on outside or this and that, I agree with all of that. But that would switch to the other channel. It wouldn't change. But the bottom line here is you want to have the same current. You know, current flows in the neutral to the hot line, and no matter how you do Ohm's law, you get the same amount of current through a circuit, and that's what we're talking about here. And I think putting a light bulb in each leg of the ladder line right near the connection point here would be an ideal test. As long as I get the same brilliance on both bulbs, I know the current is the same. I don't have one current probe for my scope. I would need, you know, ideally two of them to look at it properly, or one and move it from line to line. I think the light bulbs is the easiest way to do it, Brake.
Okay, I just thought of a way to prove or disprove my theory. If you put the dummy loads on, ran that test, and got perfectly good balance, but you take a clip lead, and a long clip lead, or just a length of wire, and coil it up, and lay it on top of the chassis of the tuner, so you get some inductive or capacitive coupling to the chassis, and then connect it to one side of the balanced output, and then measure the balance between the two, and then switch it over to the other one, and see if you get the same result as if you had the antenna connected.
Well, that's a cool idea. I could do that. But wouldn't that scenario would still prove that it would move from one leg to the other if I see an imbalance.
I don't know, but that might simulate what you're seeing with the antenna, and that would prove that that's just the way the design is.
Yeah, well, I think right now I'm really curious to see his output. It's an identical setup as mine, and if I see the same scenario there, I'm going to forget about it. And if it isn't, then I got to believe it's the metal pole versus the tree.
Right, and I think it's the way the ballon is connected to the chassis on that one leg, and any type of coupling to the chassis of the tuner, and that coil of wire would simulate that. Anyway, maybe we'll solve it, maybe we won't.
I agree with all that, but the problem would, again, if I switch the probes, the problem would move to the other channel, depending on where that loop of wire is. It wouldn't become perfectly balanced with it in line. I don't know. I think I'm just beating that. I think this is all a mute subject. And I don't think there's anything wrong with the tuner. And I was going to say something else. Well, I want to see what his output looks like. That's going to be a good test. And see exactly what's going on there. But he doesn't have the luxury of just pulling out a banana plug and turning it around to do the test. To reverse his ladder line, I got to unscrew screws and move wires. I'll have to use clip leads. Get his approval for all of that. But it won't be as easy to switch the ladder line. Like here, I can do it in a matter of seconds. I can't do that over there.
Yep, yep. May cost you a box of donuts.
Anyway, okay, I got to put my plumbing hat on and head out and get to work. So have a good day.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, KC2FD.
Yeah, okay, Rick. You know, when I started this whole thing, I got the brainstorm when I saw them, this fellow in the wheelchair, when he had a boiler, and it failed during right after, you know, they had Sandy, and then there was tons of plumbing work being done here on the island, and it was winter, and he needed it done, like, right away. I think it was January, and he needed heat, and they knew his situation, and a crew came in and did that job in one day, took out all his old boiler and put the new one in, and they were done. They started at 9 in the morning, and by 5 o'clock we're done. And I saw what a nice job they did and the brand they used. And I looked at I really was impressed with the installation. And I said, I can do this. I knew nothing about hydronic heat up to that point other than how to, you know, keep my system running, which was 50 years old. And that's when I tackled this job and replaced everything. And I've done so much reading, and I think I've done everything right. Things work, and knock on wood, running like a Swiss clock. But I learned an awful lot about hydronic heating between point A to point B.
Yeah, and I like the way you you keep all your work neat and labeled and organized. Not like a job where you go in and get out, you get your money and you're gone and never see you again. You've got to live with this, and in 5 years you're going to have to maintain it, so you're going to do it right.
Yeah, it came out pretty good, but it's not a complex system. You've got a pretty complex hydronic system there with the you got 11 zone valves, 4 pumps, very large building, and the wire was a mess. What a rat's nest of wiring. I'm sure a good plumber that's conscientious would go in and change all the valves, clean all that wiring up, and they really get the system cleaned up. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, and would you believe that all that wiring is cotton insulation on the jacket, and every time the wire goes through a wall, they feed it through a piece of conduit, and it's sharp edges on the inside of the conduit, and the cotton insulation just wears away and cuts through the PVC insulation on the conductors. It's a mess.
Yeah, well, that would be a real big job to change out all that wire. But you never know. You could pull, you know, if it's not tacked or stapled anywhere, you pull the old stuff out and pull the new stuff in. Again, that would all get a quote, get the whole system redone by a real good plumber, and that would be the way to go. I got to run, and I know you want to take off, too. KC2FD, W2RB.
Okay, have a good one. Catch you tomorrow. KC2FD.
KC2FD with W2RB. This is N2SFT. Very interesting. Best of 73, guys. And, Richie, you've got a beautiful signal. So I don't think that the imbalance is going to be able to be detected by myself or anybody else. Okay? Best of 73. Have a good day. Be careful. And good luck, Rick, on your plumbing job. And you guys have the right stuff. The right ideas. Then to SFT, I'm clear. Bye-bye. 73.
73, Bill.
73, Bill. Okay. What is my signal right now, Bill?
You're coming in here at 10 over. And it's somewhat noisy out there, so but no problem at all, cop.
Well, it's reciprocal. You're exactly 10 over here, so I know there's nothing wrong with anything. It's just that one little thing I found. It's a scenario.
Yeah, I know. You get that bug in your head, and you just have to prove it or whatever. Okay, fine business. It's great. best of 73. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Just crazy. I mean, the sockets aren't that big a deal. I
was thinking, you know, you could just about build your own. Now, these things all have fuses on each output, which is a good idea, but, boy, they're really expensive. Let's see here. eBay. Click. Click. And there's PowerPoint.
Because if I get rid of all the warts, I'm going to need a lot of outputs.
What do you call it? Anderson Power Pole something. I'll call it a box. There we go. Nope. They're selling me the connectors.
Gee. I guess I got to make it more specific. Anderson Power Pole
distribution. They don't show any. That's crazy. I'm not hitting the right word. Who knows? Anyway, nobody else is in here again today. It's getting thinner and thinner here.
Can't be because the weather is too nice, I'll tell you that.
We're only at 26 degrees now.
N3 RFO. N4 MQ.
N4 MQ, N3 RFO. Yeah, well, sometimes people just run out of stuff to say, or sometimes it could be a coincidence that several of us have got stuff to do or whatever, and, you know, everybody's got something. At least there's a couple of us here always, you know, just, of course, you got to have two, at least two. But, yeah, it does seem like it's not as the same as it was before. And I don't know whether maybe the noise that Gene was having is causing some problems, or you never know. Everybody has different things that's going on and whatnot. I know back in the, you know, back when Diane first started with this stuff. Stand by. I'm going to retune here a second, Woody. Okay, I just retuned there. That should have brought that power up a little bit. I sort of tuned for the upper end of the band instead of this this part. Anyway, you know, back there, it was, sometimes it was difficult for me to get on certain times of the day, or I just wasn't here. We were up the hospital or running down the road or something. So I wouldn't write too much into it. Sometimes people just get, you know, they don't have a lot to talk about. But I he acts on the phone all the time, and get somebody on here that likes to talk on the phone. I got a brother, he and I talk for, I have had a couple of my brothers, ones have passed away now, but we could always talk on the phone for a long time, and I have some of my friends that, you know, they just, a lot of people don't like to talk on the phone, or they don't like to talk to your face for very long. It's just strange. People get different moods and whatever. But anyway, Anderson Power Poles. Yeah, I have that Dutch set up for my I got a whole big box of QRP stuff. I use that KX3 radio with all those body pole antenna stuff and little QRP watt meters and all that stuff. Yes, you're right about that. They are expensive. There's no doubt about that. But if you wanted to make a whole, like everything in your shop, like get rid of your wall warts, like I have the same problem. I've got one thing here on my bench that's basically got my two big wall warts on it, and then my other power supplies for a lot of equipment I have here. I just leave the power supply on the wall wart unplugged with the part, and I just bring it down off the shelf and then plug it in so they don't take up so much space. Because if you got them just sitting there, they use electricity, and they're not, you know, for nothing. They're generating a little heat, so they're using power, and it shortens their life to some degree. And by just leaving them plugged in without anything hooked to them. Same thing with these Variacs and whatnot. I turn those off because they consume power, you know, on the primary side, even though there's nothing on the secondary. Although, it's not a lot, but it's, you know, it adds up. After you, when I turn the lights out in here at night and look around, I see all these LEDs and and lights lit up. Same thing in my house. My Lord, there was the TV, the computer, and the box that comes in from the cable. It looks like a light show in the living room there when you turn the lights out. So it's kind of crazy, but it doesn't consume any power. You know, if you change everything, look at the power you save by getting these new light bulbs. And now they have them, they're colored, the soft white and that sort of thing, and it's, you can probably tell the difference. Matter of fact, the only difference that I tell is when you flip the switch, there is a slight, very slight, must be a hundredth of a second or a thousandth of a second delay before that light comes on. That's the only thing I notice about LEDs. But the rest of it is kind of cool. It's, I mean, you definitely can save some energy if you want to save it. And just like with your the solar cells and whatnot, put them out there. And of course, you got to have the batteries. I was wondering what the chemistry is of the batteries you're thinking about using. Are they lead acid, or are they of gel, or are they the new, you know, lithium ion phosphates or lithium ion or whatever they are? Those are pretty pricey too. Of course, that's the latest and greatest. Those gel cells, I used those for a while when they came out back in the 80s. They're pretty good, but as long as you got a charger that's working correctly, and you don't, you know, kill the battery up and down and up and down. You just leave it mostly sit there and float. I don't know what you use on your airplanes for power, but they last a long time. And the only reason that I would put them outside would be if they gas off. You know, if there's something that could be flammable or dangerous or whatever. And of course, lead acid batteries, you got the corrosion problem. But I would definitely not put those in the house. And stay away from those if at all possible. They are the cheaper ones now. The new lead acid, I don't know whether they're vented or what they are. Sealed, I think they call them. Sealed lead acid? I'm not so sure about that, because you got to get rid of that gas somehow. I don't know exactly how that works. But there's some kind of a battery now that's sealed that didn't used to be. Matter of fact, I was just reading something yesterday about batteries, about, you know, the best and the cheapest and so on and so forth. But yeah, I don't think you're consuming a lot of power outside with your stuff. But you could almost run your gear off those things. Although I'm sitting here watching my meter on my Astron pump between about 5, key down 5, and it's pumping up about 15 amps or close to it. So that put a strain on me. You have to have a lot of cells to get that. So anyway, that's current. Current, right. Anyway, that's where we are. Something I was going to say, I can't remember what it was. Oh, let's see. It was something about books. What the heck was it? Oh, you were talking about those books that you had for clandestine stuff. Yeah, that doesn't really do much for me. What I'm trying to find, I have a really nice military long periodic antenna that's good for about 50 up through about 2 gigahertz. And I'm trying to find a manual for that thing, and cannot find it on the net. And I think it came with a system that was mounted on the back of a trailer, kind of hydraulic boom on it where you could raise it up. And I think it was used for, you know, snooping. That's basically what it was for. But a friend of mine, who is now a Silent Key, he had one up on a 50-foot tower and used it for 6 and 2 and 440 and whatnot. And it was a pretty good antenna. I guess it has a gain of maybe, depending upon the frequency, of maybe from 8 to 10, something like that. But it's, you know, a pretty good size, and it's very hefty. I'm thinking I'm going to mount it outside here, out back, and maybe use it on 6, and then I'll also be able to use it on everything else while I have it out there. I don't have to put it up in the air so high. Take a pretty good rotator on the bottom of it, though, because it's pretty heavy. But I always wanted to find some information about that, and I think it was made for the Army. But I did find some little book that kind of looked like looked like it, but it didn't tell a lot about the antenna. It just talked about the boom and stuff like that. So, but those kind of things are interesting. I like antenna stuff. That's and that's the other thing. I need to have a daggone almost a half a wall here with nothing but books. I have so many. Lots of them in the house, and every tons of them out here. And the thing is, I use them a lot. If I, you know, to look up something or research something I'm working on or whatnot, I do make a use out of most of them, especially those electric radio and now these new AWA magazines this guy gave me. They're just amazing for old, real old stuff. So. And I just like to read them. After I get tired of them, you know, 5 years ago, I'll read them again. N4MQ, N3RFO.
Okay, Les. Well, let's see here. One of the things I had thought about, not an invention, but a creation, would be that you'd have a power strip with a timer on it. So things would have the time that the power would be available and then not. You could plug all your stuff into it, and then the power strip would automatically turn off. It'd be great for things like coffee machines and, you know, charging batteries. You don't want to leave them on continuously and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that'd be a neat idea to have. The thing I did in my garage at my other house was I had the light switch drive a big contactor, and the contactor would feed power to my air compressor, 2-horsepower air compressor. And I have it in the same way in the new garage. So if the lights are turned off, the compressor's turned off. So if I blow a hose, the compressor doesn't keep running and burn itself out. I thought that was a good idea. Well, I've done the same thing in the ham shack. In the ham shack, when I turn off the lights in here, all the power goes off, excepting one outlet, which is for, like, computers and stuff. And that works real good. And the boat anchor station, for instance, I don't turn everything on and off. I have everything plugged into a power strip, and the power strip is accessible. So when I flip the switch, the power switch brings up the FX, the Ranger, the scope monitor, and all of that sort of stuff. Also brings up the Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt has two power supplies, 115 volts for housekeeping, filaments, and that sort of stuff. And the high voltage is fed off a different power circuit, which is controlled by the Thunderbolt. So the power strip handles everything. The light switches might wear out sooner, but you know, it's really convenient. I do not leave my soldering iron on, because the soldering iron is something I've always been concerned about. Fire hazard or cats getting into it. Those kinds of concerns. For the batteries, it looks like the best kind of battery is the AMG, some kind of a lead acid mat type battery, but I would be getting those for the vehicles. The solar panel is going to get the hand-me-downs from the cars. That way, the cars do their thing and we're all set. Now, I try to keep chargers on everything. My trailer battery right now is on float all winter long, and when I put it out in the trailer, the trailer has its own solar panel. I got like a 10 or 12 watt solar panel with a voltage regulator on it to keep the battery floated all summer long. Because if you got electric brakes and the battery goes bad, that's no value. So, I got all that kind of figured out. Anyway, it's a brisk, sunny day. And nothing else. Pretty much nothing else. Pretty terrible. Missing all the other guys. Of course, we did have Jeff in here yesterday. And I guess we'll have to try the AWAs. I traded that out. And I left it upstairs.
over here on the tuner.
Okay.
Friday at 9:30 a.m.
3837 is where the guys are at.
So, 3837. There, I guess, in the morning. And then, let's see, 8 o'clock on Monday night and 4 p.m. on Sunday, because it's daylight savings time. W3 GMS, I think his name is Fred, I'm not sure. He's got real good audio. He's like a broadcast kind of guy. And he's real big into audio systems. All right, Les. Well, I appreciate you being on here and getting the chance to chat with you. But consider getting yourself a power strip for your ham shack there. Harbor Freight has nice ones. I got a bunch of them here.
I got like 8 outlets, and they're spaced about 6 inches apart,
so you don't have a problem with the wall warts bumping into each other, that kind of thing. Something you might want to take a look see at. So there you have it.
I'll let you close it out, my friend.
N3RFO, N4MQ, listening.
N4MQ, N3RFO. Yeah, okay, Woody. Yeah, I was just looking at some of those strips that they have there. I like those. It's just, I don't know what the brand name is. They're black with yellow receptacles on them. They have a light on it. And that's what I do. I have all the lights so I can see it from the door. And that way it reminds me. I always scan everything and I look up at my heat pump. It has a light on it. Make sure I turn that on. That's what I do is I turn all these lights off. And that turns the power strips off. But the other things that are on are, you know, my weather thing, which is not working, but it's a real nice night light, that sort of stuff. And yeah, soldering irons, boy, those have burned many a house down. I had a friend of mine I worked with. He was a TV repairman on the side, burned his house down. He said he went to bed that night and he woke up and he asked his wife, did she leave the heat on? She said, why is it so hot in here? And my God, the whole house in the basement was involved in the flame. They didn't even know it. Of course, when he got up, he smelled the smoke and he said, I opened the basement door and a flame shot out and took his whole house down. You know, a nice place. Man, it was a nightmare. Anyway, soldering irons and clothes dryers, two bad, bad things. But anyway, yeah, W3GMS, isn't his name Paul? Is it Paul Corson? I think that's his name. I don't know him personally, but I've talked to him before. Yeah, real nice, has a radio voice, too, to go with his nice audio. He's been around. He's a big AM guy. Which it sounds like to me most of those, a lot of those guys are also, so that's a good thing. Why not try them out one day? All right, Woody, have a great day, and we'll talk at you later there. Stay out of the cold. N4MQ, N3RFO, 73.
Yes, sir. Good day.
Good. Medicare has worked quite well for me. I did buy Carol and I both have supplemental policies, which I think are pretty important, but the Medicare itself has been, I've had no problems with it. I did not go with an Advantage plan because I didn't want to get involved with in-network and out-network and all that other kind of business that can be a problem, and my regular Medicare is just fine with me, and because I basically don't trust private insurance. I think Bernie's taking a sort of an absolutist approach and wants to eliminate private insurance. I don't think that'll happen. That's pretty obvious. And think a single payer option with some kind of a deal like that, a public option, is preferable way to go. And if people want to stay on these employer-provided things, fine. They're actually the employer-provided insurance is his coverage is really shrinking with the high deductibles and that sort of thing. And just the way it is, that's not that is not working terribly well for a lot of Americans. I hear that all the time from people who work for large corporations. The deductibles are very, very high, and essentially a large portion of their medical cost is self-funded. It's self-insured, essentially. And you have to get to a pretty severe set of circumstances before your employer-provided coverage, in a lot of cases, kicks in. I'm happy with what I've got, and it certainly was cheaper. I think the last year that we bought health insurance for the two of us with no health problems, no chronic medical conditions and that sort of thing, it was $19,000 a year. And, of course, as a result of Obamacare, it was no longer deductible. For years, my business paid for my insurance, and it was paid pre-tax. And then when I got to the end, that last year or two, whatever that was, it was, you figure, basically, it was over, well over 30,000, mid 30,000s of income I had to produce to pay that that $19,000. So it's pretty high. And others had people with health problems. A couple that we know, they were paying. He had some heart problems, and she had had a bout with cancer, and their premium was about $26,000. And that's pretty steep. That's post-tax. That's paid out of net dollars after taxes. It's a lot of money. They had a business, and it threw off enough revenue that they were able to afford it, but pretty pricey. So, you know, I think, and I think the electability issue is something to focus on. I mean, we can have a Pyrrhic victory. We can have a candidate which espouses all the things we like. But I'm not convinced. It's a tough deal. I'm not convinced that they're electable. I don't want to vote solely on principle. I'd like to, I think it's really important that get a change of administration between the attack on the legal system and now this latest deal with somebody that's wholly unqualified, a political operative to head the DNI, Grinnell. That beats all. And then the obvious cover-ups with Barr. You know, transferring the Ukraine, the investigation from the Southern District to the Eastern District of New York. It's an obvious political fix. I mean, they're fixing cases. Basically, it's a political operation, and I guess that's part of the deal. One thing is to protect Trump. The other, of course, is to undermine the confidence of the American people in our legal system, in our law enforcement. You know, Trump has consistently attacked our U.S. military, people that deserve respect. Attacked the legal system, attacked the free press. Oh, the arguments with fake news, and the guy, almost every time he opens his mouth, he says something that's false. Talk about fake news, but he lied about the economy consistently, about the economy, about his electoral victory, on and on and on. The fellow is just so fundamentally dishonest, and I think it's ultimately a reflection of his mental state, the way he's lived his life with deception and basically doing whatever you want. And I don't know. It just goes on and on. And he's really putting the nation at risk for this. The
I'll look for that. It'll be an interesting show and see if we can pull that up. And yeah, it's better than most of the stuff that's on the boot tube.
Well, Kevin, I got to tell you, they really instill in there. The guy that does this, that wrote all these things up, he does, I don't know if he plays the music, but it's got beautiful, like, guitar music in there. It's really nice. Matches, like, the photography that he's showing there. But the main thing he instilled, they show all the women that worked in these logging camps and supply, like, the farmers, worked the side-by-side with the farmers and different places, even where they made the, the railroad logging, the ties and that for them. Man, I got to tell you, the guy, they even had, I guess, written things where, at the time when this guy took the photography, he talked to the people and wrote, had books on it, like ledgers. The guy's right in there, Kevin. I mean, you can say these guys are really tough cookies in the woods there. Every one of them says if it wasn't for their wives or their girlfriends or people that are women that helped them there, they couldn't do it. Kevin, they couldn't do that kind of work, over.
Oh, yeah, it was hard work out there, long days, and they started early, and, a lot of times, when my grandfather always said, they had to start really early, it was way before sunrise, and they had to be out of the woods by 9 or 10, because the bugs would be so bad.
Yeah, well, I thought that other program, sure, they show all that stuff, and this thing has more with the women, how they supported their families then. This guy, Isaac Walt, he wrote about his wife, how she would work helping him and taking care of the family and doing all the cooking and that during the daytime hours. After he would come home, or the other, talking about other farmers, they would try to get their sleep early, get to bed. These women worked all night, Kevin, all night knitting and making clothes for their husband and the kids, and then they even took lifts to help, like, neighbors and different people, and I guess somewhere, like, in southern parts of Maine here, these salesmen would come up and give a lift to different people like that in the town, and these women would work all night, Kevin, just to do the knitting and that, and start in again, like, at 4 o'clock in the morning to start cooking, over.
Hard lives, and didn't have a lot of stuff easy, did they? And not all the modern conveniences that we have.
But
you
got to
find yourself one of them, Bob.
Okay, Kevin, we couldn't touch these kind of people, And I'll tell you, watching that, and I heard about Bloomberg yesterday. I saw some of that nonsense there, how he knows everything. If a guy like him lasted 1 hour up there, he couldn't even shine those women's shoes, over.
Yeah, and then a lot of places, if you went down towards Bangor, there were different factories, that were on the river and powered by the mills, where they made either textiles or a lot of them made shoes too. There was a lot of shoe factories in that area. I have relatives that worked in some of the shoe and boot factories, and there was one, where they were, but I know there was a textile place too. I had one. Still work there when one of the textile places. And, basically they didn't use stuff. They had the 90-pound bolts of fabric, and that's what he did. He had to move those around.
It is amazing, what people work like that, Kevin. And like the guy explains here, a lot of people, they never got sick. I mean, of course, they had diseases that didn't have cures for or anything to help in those days. But if you worked outside in the woods, unless you had some bad DNA or something, you'd probably last longer than anybody now, over.
Yeah, well, then, of course, the other problem was accidents, because there were, the accidents in the woods, people would get hit and hit by trees, or there were accidents, a lot of those in the woods, and a lot of times things didn't work out well for some people. But it wasn't because they didn't work hard enough; they wouldn't take your life.
You got that one there. One thing that caught my eye, I gotta tell you, if you see this thing. Boy, I'll tell you, what a change, Kevin. Showing all the people and farmers, you know, like they would show a sequence of the farms, and then they'd go into the woods, show the guys working in the woods. Mostly all those people carry either Winchesters or Marlins in those days. Boy, they didn't mess around, over.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons, right? One of them is being you never knew what you were going to see, and there might be a chance to get some food, right?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you one thing. Maybe that's why people were more neighborly.
Yeah, well, I think what it was, Rudyard Kipling said that an armed society is a polite society.
Oh, I'm serious. They got some great pictures there. I can actually see the model numbers of them, you know. You can tell which guns they were. Some guys had Marlins and the logging camps. Of course, they'd hunt moose and bear and things like that to help the cooks and that, but deer. But, man, you could see the guns there. They took good care of them. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I'll look for that. I'll have to find that, and it'll be fun to watch. So, I was going to tell you that we're, I'll have to talk to you about that off the air. So what else we got going on here? I'm surprised Dave hasn't popped in.
Oh, well, he's probably working there. I'll tell you, his daughter, from what he's telling me there, his daughter, I don't know if she works as a nurse too, or like his wife did there, but I got to give that woman a lot of credit, boy. She's just like you see in these old pictures there, these women. I got to tell you, Kevin, and these women, they didn't fool around. I mean, they must have told their husbands, look at them, we got to do something today. We got to do it. Man, I tell you, you won't find that now.
No, they'd be crying.
Yeah, we got Dave. That wasn't you, was it, Dave?
November 1, Japan Charlie Whiskey, Roger.
Okay, Jim. Yeah, hey, Jim. We heard you. Heard you there. Heard your call.
Yeah, Roger. I heard you guys out here. I left it on here from last night and turned it on. Yeah, somebody's awake.
Okay, well, Jim, we're just catching up on some of the things we've been learning about the old timers and up in Maine and how difficult their lives were compared to what we got.
Yeah, I was listening to you guys for a while. That's the truth. It was a lot different years ago compared to what it is now. That gentleman says, it's a totally different lifestyle. If these women had that lifestyle now, they'd be crying, Roger.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think I probably would be too. You know, that was a rough life. So, I know that, a number of my, this time from when they were logging and stuff up in Maine, that's where all my family came from, and they were doing either farming or logging. You did one or the other, sometimes both, right? And, I know they, I think about my grandfathers and my great-grandfathers that I knew, they all lived hard lives.
Yeah, well, like I say, it was a different lifestyle back then, and people had, you had to learn to survive, the fear to survive, and it's just one of those things that, you don't realize it, what it was like back then. I mean, if people could actually go back in time and spend, a few months doing that, and they come back to reality, they'd wake up a lot, because, I was always into that stuff myself, looking at how they survived versus how we survive now, Roger.
Yep, okay, very good. Well, WA1C, okay, Bob, are you hearing N1JCW up there?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Yeah, good morning, Jim. This is Bob up in northern New Hampshire. Yeah, I worked in woods for many years here, and that's not my survival, but I'll tell you, Jim, those women they had there, those are real women. I'm so thankful I get to see these pictures, Jim. This is I'm getting on public television. I don't know if it's on other things that you have satellite or something like that, but these are right now I'm seeing these on Vermont Public Television for some reason. They're not on New Hampshire, but just there. And this fella has produced at least three of these, and the one I was telling Kevin about just a little while ago there, that's this Isaac Walton. He did wet and dry glass photography, and I wanted to tell Kevin this too, Kevin, that this guy, he would go even in the winter, of course, he had to have a sleigh, like a big sled here. I don't know if he had two mules or some homeless thing to get up into these real remote northern areas up in Maine there, way up, because he said he went up to Fort Kent, different places like that in there, Kevin, and it was to protect those glass plates. And from what he said there, the fellow that was burying, it takes for one of those pictures, it would take the guy at least an hour, I guess, to go through the process to make one picture, and then he has to keep those plates in a special box. You know, no, I pictured this, really, this guy, he said, like, if you bounce, he bounced on the sleigh in somewhere like that, it could break these things. You know, Kevin, I gotta tell you, you picture this, this guy had to carry those photographic plates almost like he was carrying nitroglycerin, over.
And when he killed...
Yeah, N1DEQ, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I was listening to you guys talk, and those women, their values in life and family are much higher standards than what we have.
You're not kidding, sir. That is no joke.
They put us men and women down here to shame.
I saw my friend Kevin here, the picture I saw last night, this one fellow did it back in the 1890s, about into 1930, I think his pictures were. Those women, too, the way they dressed there, even though they worked hard in that, they kept themselves as clean as they could and neat looking. I got Jim, you can pass along to Jim or his other gent there. I got to tell you, when I went into town the other day, I mean, it was cold. It was zero when I got into town. There was a girl walking around with those blue jeans. They looked like a cannonball went through their knees. I wonder why she's so cold, Kevin.
Yeah, you got that. Yeah, that's right. And you pay extra, you know. You pay extra to get all those holes in your pants now.
The woman, one of the girls I know in Littleton told me she paid $100 for that type of a jean.
Yeah, very good. I believe it. Yeah, it's that makes them stylish. So, N1DEQ, I never caught the name there.
My name is Jim, Julian Neil Michael, and I'm in Randolph, Massachusetts.
Okay, very good. Yeah, K1KGY, Kevin, I'm here in Nashua, and W1CLK, Bob, is up in northern New Hampshire. And then N1JCW, the other Jim, is, if I remember right, he's over towards Gardner, Mass.
No, South Carolina, Massachusetts, Roger.
Oh, South Shore, so you're not too far from the other Jim in Randolph, then.
Nope, we're not that far, probably a couple pounds away from each other, Roger.
Yeah, Jim, you hear the other Jim pretty good at, you know, at the distance apart at this time of day?
I hear him down 10 meters a little bit, Roger.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Kevin's about 178 miles apart, Kevin. So we got a pretty good route, at least, at this time of day.
Yeah, I think we're 105 miles the last time I charted it. Maybe 102, I think, sounds like about right. And I bet Randolph and South Shore, that's probably, maybe 40, not quite 45 air miles from here. So, yeah, it's... That maybe close enough, but that may explain why their signals are a little weaker to me than you are up north.
Well, at least I can hear everybody here. But just like I gotta tell you, Jeff, when you mentioned about we're talking about the shoes before, that those logging guys that made all the, well, I guess they just cut the blocks. I don't know. Maybe they did cut them up here.
Some kind of, maybe they have salesmen go up there and bring, the size of people.
guy opened up the thing one day, and he was checking for some other older person in there. They had all racks of those forms.
Yeah, I don't know what they were made of, maple or what, but they had all the things marked by numbers, and they had the people's names on them, over.
Yeah, that's funny. I don't remember that at all. I don't even remember hearing about that, that people kept their own forms. So, somebody had to carve in a little old town, right? It had to be a lot of work. Well, you know, and the shoe industry, think about what it was. There was a big shoe industry in New England, you know. I remember having my relatives work at it. I bet both the gyms probably remember that, too. In the group, K1JGY.
K1JGY, yeah, we have one of the largest shoe factories just not far from where I live. I used to live in Wayne, and they had one right at the top of the hill coming off the highway, and called Tested Shoes. They used to make all kinds of leather shoes and everything else, and then you think of the city of Brockton was the same way. They were doing it as Shoe City back in the probably 50s or in late 40s. All the factories are all basically gone now. They're turning into condos, Roger.
Yeah, that seems to be the way that things go now, is that all the old mills have done some of that up here too in New Hampshire, turn the old mills into condos and get top dollar for them up here. So I don't know, what do you think? N1D, you probably seen the same thing, right?
Trying to figure it out.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, well, now half the, you know, all the shoes, you think about everything that they make now, it's all coming over from Asia, and they're making it all, paying $2 or $3 to make a pair of sneakers and selling them for $200 over here. That sounds like about right for a business you got to get into, Bob.
Yeah, no kidding. I was going to tell you before, Kevin, with this, I saw on the Japanese news network here early this morning, they were showing that thing in South Korea. That is correct, you know. 2.5 million people they got isolated. I don't know if that's outside of Seoul, if there's another city that big or not. Think about it, though. The way we import things, like you're talking shoes and that, if something happens with that epidemic, gets worse, we'd be in deep trouble here. I mean, they could shut down the whole world's economy like this.
Yeah, well, that's what everybody's afraid of, right? And that's why the stock market gets a little jittery, because people are worried about business future and what it could mean if all of a sudden there's no stuff coming over. I know that a lot of the factories for the company I used to work for, they're all shut down, and then... And then one of our major customers, you know, they were making all those mobile phones over in China. All those places are shut down, too. They're just shut down dead. So, you know, a lot of that production, it has come to a halt there, and who knows when it's going to come back.
Jeffy, can I ask you that? I remember you told me, I always knew these younger people, as you know, I go into town if I meet somebody different here, young people, about that city you told me about where the people jumped off the balconies. They had the big chain mail or something up there, big fences up there so people couldn't commit suicide. Is that one of the cities that's under siege?
Well, it's not one of the cities where they've reported lots of the viruses there, but then you don't know exactly what they've reported. And they did close that down. They sent everybody back, you know, to whatever village or wherever they came from, just to try to prevent it, you know, prevent it from spreading around.
Is that the place you told me it was the size of Hartford, Connecticut or something, where all the people there had to work at that? What was that they manufactured there, Kevin? Was that the electronics?
Yeah, they make people's mobile phones. They make the phones there, and they make the phones for Apple. And it's like, I forget, It's like 200 and something thousand employees in one city, in one factory. It's just a huge factory.
Holy smoke. And that's one of the places where it's contaminated?
No, from what they've said on the press, it's not, you know, that's not one of the centers of the epidemic, but they shut it all down because they don't want to, you know, the government's trying to stop it from spreading, so they've shut down. That's why you see those videos on TV that show the city's deserted. They look like they're deserted, but everybody's just staying inside because they've shut everything down.
Yeah, but Kevin, those cities are so big. How do they take away, like, garbage and things like that? Well, they have to have special warfare, wearing their biological warfare suit to go in and clean everything?
Well, you see them doing that on the news, but I don't know how much of it. You know, you never know what news you're getting that's real and what they're really doing. It's just hard to know. It's such a closed, it's not open to open society, open to the press and everything. It's hard to know what they're doing. It's we're nervous about it. They've got to be downright scared about it.
Well, that is scary. From the Japanese show, a lot more than what you get on a regular news over here. They're kind of on that stuff because they got some people there working in South Korea. And it didn't look good, I'll tell you that.
Well, they built a big hospital down there five buildings for hospital. They're a nation hospital out there. And that's where a lot of people are now.
Yeah, but Jim, I think that's only for that one city. This stuff must be spreading in a lot of other places.
Oh, yeah, it's already got quite a bit of different countries. They were showing a map on nightly news last night where it's gone, and I tell you, they're going to get a grasp on it pretty soon, or you're not going to want to travel anywhere.
Yeah, I guess I know Kevin, I joke with Kevin, gee, maybe I'll get lucky and win a lottery ticket, but Kevin, that'd be about the place I'll end up.
Yeah, they'll give you a free trip to China, yeah. It's,
there you go, that'll be what you win. Oh, that's cool, because I mean, some of the people they showed in the... Well, I don't know what they call them over there. They're really poor. The ones that, they're all agricultural. I think they're like slaves out in the other parts of China there. Really, they're so poor, but that's brutal. I mean, I wonder if something like that spreads around. One guy can, drives a truck or something. He goes to those different provinces and that, like, they can spread that like wildfire.
Well, they were saying that woman got off of one of the ships. And she was, she contaminated 40 people, Roger.
Yeah, what's that, on the big ship there, Jim?
Yeah, the one that got off in Australia. She got off into Australia. Not the one that was in the sea in Japan, but when they got off in Australia, she came down with it right after she contaminated like 40 people in an office building or an apartment building. So it shows you how fast it can move.
Yeah, you're not kidding me. We're talking about that the other day, Jim. But Kevin and I were talking about that one person. I don't know if they call it here, kind of super carriers or what, but holy smoke, that is scary, huh?
Yeah, it is. And, hopefully this thing will burn itself out here in a couple of months. So, but it won't go on any longer than that. But it may be a couple of months, before the... I guess these things tend to go with the weather. So when the weather warms up, it'll start to close down. So anyway, I got to get moving on. I got a medical appointment I got to make before too long here. So we'll start to close this out. Pass it back up to you, so Bob, W-A-1-C, okay, K-1-K-G-Y-M group.
Yeah, okay, Kevin. Well, thanks for popping in here. And maybe I'll try to call you something. I don't know if I can do it, but maybe if I go up in the woods today, I can reach you.
That's unbelievable. I got to go 100 yards up in the part of the woods here. I might be able to talk to you for a few minutes.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks for popping in here. Nice to hear you, Jim. Coming through pretty good this morning. I hope the other Jim there is all right. So I'm going to go downstairs myself and
are getting bringing in more wood. I think it's up to, yeah, it must be up to about seven above zero now, so it looks like it's going to get pretty warm today. So we'll see you guys later. Thank you so much for the nice cue, though, everybody. Yeah, if you want to pick it up there, maybe you hear the both gyms better there for a final. You pick it up there, Kevin. WA1CLK, over.
Okay, very good. Well, you have a good one, Bob. And, you know, if you can't get a signal on the telephone later, just give me a ring whenever the next time you go to town, and I should be able to pick up phone. So you have a good one. We'll talk again soon. So, N1JCW, Jim, you still in there?
Yeah, I'm still here, Kevin. You're doing a 5-7, no problem at all. Copying that, just didn't hear a little bit of I'm soldering coaxial connectors off the back coax. So that's what I'm doing today, and gonna do a little bit of woodworking today, and stay in the house, blow on a chilly side today, Kevin. Kevin, what's your call sign for when you go?
K1KGY.
K1KGY, is that Roger?
That is correct. You got it.
What was Bob's call sign?
Bob is WA1CLK. Charlie Lima Kilo.
Oh, very good. All right. Yeah, I guess you're both down. I just wanted to write you down and put in my log. Oh, very good. Well, you know, let's go and you get off to the doctor's appointment. I don't know what happened to the other gym, but I'll see if I can chase him down. I know he's having some issues with his amp cable or whatever, Roger.
Okay, good. Well, hopefully you'll get that. We tend to get on here a lot of mornings when we can. We'll see if we, we'll see when the next time we link up is. But you guys, it's always good to hear others jump in and see what's going on and who's where. And, WA1CLK is, that's actually his original call that he got as a novice in the 1950s. I think it was like maybe 1955, 1956. So that's an old call that goes way back. So anyway, you take care and have a good day, and hopefully all your activities will go well. It's a little warmer in South Shore than it is up in northern New Hampshire, hopefully. So you take care. 73s, K1KGY.
Hi, Kevin. Nice talking with you. Nice to hear somebody out here. I'm usually out here at nighttime with the nighttime boys, and I just happened to leave it on there, and I turned it on and heard you out there. All right, take care of yourself, Bob. If you're still listening, take care of yourself. Don't get in the firewood in the house, and have a good day, guys. 73.
M1DEQ.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Are you sticking around? And Bob, and Kevin, and I forget the other gentleman's name. It's nice talking to you this morning. Maybe I'll come back again tomorrow and we can talk again.
Thank you, Jim. I hear you. I hear you pretty good. Yeah, I'm going to have to pull out of here. I got to bring in wood to heat up the house if I'm freezing. You know, it's getting real hot. At least it's warm. It was 20 below about 5:30 this morning, so it's getting warmer. So I'm going to do what I have to do here. We'll see you guys. Thanks a lot. WA1CLK. Good morning.
WA1CLK. I had an emergency run to the men's room. That's where I was. I heard my call sign go off. The radio wasn't fine.
Okay, N1DEQ, 73, good morning, K1KGY.
Well, Jimmy, it sounded a lot better. N1DEQ, W back to you.
Yeah, I'm on different antenna. You actually, I'm on the heart, the wire, and you couldn't hear me on 10 meters.
Oh, Roger, Roger. Yeah, well, you're doing a good job. I got a copy of you. And he's sounding good. Sounding very good. Yeah, I got a wire myself. I want a Adolphi or a three-band long wire. It's only 100 feet long. It's got four coils and two on each end. And it stretches out over 100 feet, Roger.
I also have a Help Adolphi DXCC. It's 80 to 10. But I don't have it hooked to this radio.
Roger, yeah, very good. Yeah, I put it up a few weekends ago and it's been working fine. I gotta fly a little further up before the trees bloom, because one ends up near the trees. And I've got it
stretch it a little bit to get 60 meters to come down on the SWR. And let's see if I get to work a little better on that. 160. It's 180 and 160. And I like it as a 3-band because, you know, I like to work the lower bands at nighttime. I've been getting more and more into them and talking on the lower bands, Roger.
Roger. I also have a Gap Titan, 80% also, but it's a vertical. I used to have it up on the roof, and it did fantastic. I took it off the roof and put another antenna up and put the Gap Titan 10 feet off the ground.
It doesn't do that well.
Yeah, they say the higher the better with the Adolphius. And I'm getting her up about 30 feet. At the end, it's probably 20 feet in the middle. I've got a woman of power. I'm going to get the guys together. I want to get it closer to the tower. I'm going to put it in like a V tap a little bit and see how it works that way. Get it more closer to the tower or closer to it. You know, pull it off to away from the tree. Get it out of the middle of the yard and get it up higher.
But it's really working fine for me. I'm getting up to place where everybody says they sound good. I'm only putting out what am I doing?
I'm doing about 800 watts. 800 watts to do it, Roger.
I think you're doing super. What is your call again?
W1 what? It's November 1 and Julie's calling with me. November 1, just can't wait, Roger.
Number 1 just can't wait. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah. Very good, yeah. Well, I'm glad that, you know, glad you come up for 10 meters. I mean, you don't get that high. No, I have an issue with the 950 with the audio. They say it sounds real scratchy. But this morning it sounds fine. I put the headset into the radio and then listened to it this morning and it sounded good.
The ST-950?
Yeah, yeah.
That's my other radio. It's right next to me. I can turn it on.
Yeah, well, if you look at my webpage, you'll see on the radio. I turned it up to a flea market at Women, and I had a lot of insults given to me about, I'll give you $600 for it. I'll give you $700. No, I didn't. I can't get close to $1,000 for it. I'm not selling it. I just said to myself, you know what? Put it back up on the shelf. And I got the 950 above the 1200. 1200 is my main radio, and then I got the, all my other little radios above that. I've been adding more and more shelves to my table here. Right out of room, I got one more space than anything into one radio. And that's going to be my ST-450 beside my 1200. I use that as a go kit. My 450 goes in a Pelican box, and I can take off and operate that as a go kit, Roger. That's what I want to do with mine. I'm going to set up a 950 into my amp and have a 1200. I have enough space for it. I'm going to do that next. That's my next little trial. And put my 10 meter antenna into my amp into the 950. I've got the Quadra, the 1 kilowatt Quadra made by Yaesu for an amplifier, Roger.
On this radio, I have a ELAD hooked up to it from the receiver. It's like DNFM.
Hey, Roger, yeah, you sound a little
flight, you get a little sketchy, but I still talk to you, Roger.
I might be talking too loud into the mic. I never adjusted the sound, but did anyone bounce back and forth? Which radio do you like better, the first radio or the second radio?
I like your second radio a lot better, Roger.
Wow, that sucked. The other one's new.
That's what usually happens on that, Jim. I got the 1200 in line for the amplifier, and I want to set up the amplifier with the 950 so I can have them both operate on the amp and get them set up. So I'm very good. I enjoy it. I've had a good time with it. Since I retired. My wife said I spent too much time on the radio, but I've never spent too much time on the radio. And I enjoy it. Keeps me out of trouble.
Roger. My other radio is the Yaesu 991A.
Now, that's a good radio.
I really never sat down and tinkered with all the knobs I have there and set it up. And I gotta get somebody to work with me some night that's a little closer to me. That way I can have the audio just right.
Hey, Roger, Roger. If you look me up on USA, you can get my email, or if you want, you can take my phone number down. If you want to try it one night, we'll spend some time together and do it one night, Roger.
Roger. Sounds like a plan.
Got a piece of paper handy?
Say again?
I said, you got a piece of paper handy? Send you my number, you can give me a call on my cell phone. I'll forget my cell phone so I know who it is, brother.
You're over the radio, are you?
Yeah, I'll give it to you on the radio.
Last time I done that, I got all kinds of prank phone calls.
Stand by for 1 minute.
Difficulty. I took a CLE course, as a matter of fact, just out of interest, was taught by a couple of assistant DAs in Philadelphia that dealt with issues and crimes and illegal possession of firearms and all that kind of thing. It was quite interesting. And they outlined, it actually provided a very nice handout on the current state of the law federally and in Pennsylvania. And then they talked about the practicalities in dealing with, say, the police when you're carrying. I have a concealed carry permit, so that's not a problem here in Pennsylvania. But, of course, New Jersey. I mean, that woman here a few years ago, they locked her up. She had a carry permit in Pennsylvania, and I think she went across the Ben Franklin Bridge and was stopped on the other side of the bridge, some unrelated matter, and she admitted that she had a gun, and they took her to jail, and it took quite a long time to, I think there was quite a commotion over the thing, and I think the governor gave her clemency. I think that's how that worked out, but in New Jersey, they're fairly draconian in their approach to firearms, unlike here in Pennsylvania. But believe me, it's not worth getting arrested for. Go ahead, Dave, W3BB.
Yeah, you know what, here in Pennsylvania, they cling to their Bibles and their guns. You know that, right?
Yeah, well, I wanted to be able to go to the range, and I wanted to get out of jail free card, and that what that really amounts to is you get a concealed carry permit. They're not terribly difficult to get here in Pennsylvania. They call that right to issue. I think that's the phrase they use. It basically, unless you fit into one of the categories that exclude you from possessing a firearm, and you have to be essentially vertical and able to breathe.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to make. So, okay, well, I sent Kurt a neat text message, and I know he's not around right now. And next week he'll be around. He'll stop by here to pick up a couple QSDs for me and something else. And then I told him I'm going to take the Eagle to you, Marty. So that'll work out well for you. And we'll get that in the truck, in Alan's truck. And that's a small box, I believe. So let's see what else is going on here. My wife has her book club here today, so I'm going to have to. That's kind of like this afternoon, so I'll have to be with the dog and probably take her for a couple long walks, and then she'll settle in here. She'll be okay with that, but I guess I'll have to divert her a little bit, so maybe I'll take her for a ride. I don't even know. We'll see. So that's the story, and you'll, you know what? I'm thinking about that compressed air thing or with a pellet gun. You probably could use that to shoot the wire over the roof, Marty, right?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's an extremely accurate, I can't call it a firearm, call it a weapon. It's extremely accurate. The course of fire is 10 meters. About 34 feet. The target is pretty small. It's an open sight. No lenses on it. Nice and cool. And I enjoyed it. It's also the kind of thing. I was thinking if I could ever get it to California, which you would depend on, I guess, having private transport. Then you could set up a target in your in the garage or in your backyard. Doesn't make any noise. That kind of stuff. But anyway, the way things look right now, I have no idea whether or not I would be able to take it with me. And shipping it would just, I think, cost too much. In fact, I don't even know. I'm not sure how it's shipped. I guess it's shipped as hazmat because of the CRT tank that goes with it. Anyway, as I said, it's a mystery. But there's a lot of stuff here that I think Kurt could make use of. And maybe you two might find some of my stuff usable. I've got the storage bins, you know, little plastic trays in them and so on. Some of them have never really been used. You know, they're pretty pristine. And I've been looking around. I'm sure we'll find some stuff here that you might make use of. And that's pretty much it. More, of course, the alternative would be if I can't find a good home for this stuff, it winds up getting thrown out, which I think would be wrong. Anyway, that's pretty much it. So right now, as I said, the April date looks good. We'll be away in Italy in next month, for a couple of weeks. And if this deal gets signed up, then I would like, of course, to get the contract signed. We would be planning on a closing date around April 30. Then, once I close, you know, we hot foot it out to the coast to nail down a place. So that's the plan. W3BV on the group, K2KGF.
Yep. K2KGF, W3BV. Well, sounds like we're getting this thing organized, what we're going to be doing, and we'll take it. There'll be room in the truck. Let's put it that way. There will be room in the truck, and we'll hope we can distribute the stuff and deal with it. It's a tough deal. That's a long move, too. I moved from one end of the county to the other. I moved from Maryland back here when I worked in D.C. I lived in suburban Washington and moved back up to Pennsylvania, but that's the longest move I've ever had to deal with. And I thought it was a logistical nightmare when I was moving because I had all this stuff to move. You're making it easier on yourself by taking all that stuff with you. I had the big transmitters and amplifiers and the three drill presses and all kinds of tools and welding machine and pressers. I think if I had to do this again, I think I'd be inclined to leave the key under the mat and drive away. I certainly am not doing that, and that really is our game plan when we move, is to go to a church-sponsored assisted living facility. We'll be out there this Sunday. And we're going to meet with some friends of ours for lunch out in Kennett Square, which is the area where we're going. And that will be a situation where I'm no longer a homeowner, which I'm basically not unhappy about. I guess there's quite a few hundred acres there, and I'm fairly confident I can put up some wire in the trees and that kind of thing. I think they will be able to. In fact, I mentioned it, and they didn't think it was a problem. We'll figure it out. And, of course, there's always the remote deal. My son and daughter both have houses, and you can always put up antennas there and remote in with the Flex or whatever is that end current rig of choice. So that's one way to deal with it. And my son, in fact, has put in a bid on a house. We'll see how that works out. A very nice neighborhood in Easton. So I could always set up a station there. And he can get to use it himself. So I've already thought about those problems. The biggest deal is just getting rid of the stuff. And the more stuff you have, the more burden you have. And I figure I better start now. Already, and I guess we're looking at maybe 7 or 8 years, roughly, something like that, before we leave here. Go ahead, Dave. K2KGF, W3BV.
All right. I'll pick it up. WA3HVR. Yeah, well, judging by what I know that you have, if you start now, you might be ready in 7 or 8 years. It's a lot of stuff to dispose of. not easy to get rid of stuff these days. It really isn't. There is a shrinking population of hams who want a lot of this stuff or even know what it is. That's a major factor. But you're right about the remoting. If you're going to remote, the Flex that you have is absolutely the way to go. It's not the Flex that we have. That's not a good way to go. But the Flex that you have is superb for remote. It's just made for that, and it's simple to do. You just plug it. You have an Ethernet port. You plug it right into your router, and you're done. And if you don't have a router right there, you can get a little wireless modem, and plug it into the Flex, and now you're Wi-Fi. So yeah, that's all doable, and that's definitely an easy thing to do. So if I was going to go remote, that would be a radio that I would have. So anyway, but at this point, I don't have any gear to get rid of that I have to get rid of or want to get rid of. And anything I have here, you know, I told my wife if I go, just give it all to the radio club, make a donation of it, and let them dispose of it. So that's how I feel about it. Anyway, that is it. And what else can I mention? I was waiting for a card from Belarus. It's a country I've worked before, Echo Whiskey 8. Worked it, but never got a card anywhere. So I sent a card and money and an envelope. And this guy about a month ago emailed me. He said, I sent the card out. So I'm waiting. Nothing happened. So I emailed him, and I said, still didn't get your card. So as soon as I emailed it, it came in the mail that day. So it's up on the wall now. And I worked another one after that, and I sent him a card and money. So now I'll probably have two of them eventually. But that's a country that I didn't have. So now the next thing I have to do is next card I get of a new country, I have to hang up a new holder. I have room for another card holder that'll put 20 more cards up on the wall. So that will be that. And there's a couple that I'm still looking for that may be gettable. and we'll see. These de-expeditions and whatever, some of them are canceled now because of coronavirus. I just read that on the ARL newsletter. So that's problematic. I mean, you have a lot of impact of this coronavirus, you know. So I don't know. And I meant to mention, and I may have told one or both of you guys, but when we were in Orlando at the hotel we stayed at for the hamcation, we're in the elevator, and there was Tim K3LR, you know, from DX Engineering, with his embroidered shirt and everything. And I introduced myself and Lori in the elevator going up, and he had a big bag he was carrying back from the Hamfest that day. So that was kind of cool. Go ahead, Marty. WA3HVR.
Yep, okay, very good. I'm glad you had a good time. K2KGF. I have not been... let me think about this. The last ham venture I went to was 1980, Daytona. And I think I told you guys, there was a beautiful station. Let me think what it was. I think it was a 75A4. And of course all the transmitting equipment that goes with the station like that. It was a total Collins, beautifully kept. And I forget now what they wanted. I asked about the receiver. They wanted, I think, $400 for it. And I was seriously thinking about it. But looking back on it, it's a good thing I didn't buy it. It would have taken up my whole shack. And the damn things are big and heavy. Anyway, yeah, that was quite nice. Hang on a sec. I got a phone call. Let me just check this.
I was on autopilot 2, Dave. I just said K2 KGF. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to slide you. WA3 HVR.
Hey, that's okay. I want you to know I've been called a lot worse.
Well, anyway, I apologize for that.
No worries, as they say. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, I wouldn't worry about it at all. I saw there was a lot of Collins gear for sale down there. None of it was moving because I saw it on both days. It's no takers for any of that stuff. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. And stuff that I would have loved in the 70s and whatever, but could never afford. And, all that was there. It was not just Collins, but there was a lot of other vintage equipment that would look like it was in very, very good condition. That is, from a physical panel and case standpoint, you don't know what's inside, but you assume that when something looks like it's in that condition, that you're going to find it in otherwise good condition, too. So, we don't know, but it was, at this point, everything has to be small and lightweight for me. I can't lift heavy things, and, it's just the way I like it anyway. Astron had a really nice stand there at Hamcation, and they had their power supplies all set up, and I was looking at them, and the one I have, my goodness, this thing's got to be 25 years old, that I have this Astron 35M, which they still make. They still make it, the same power supply. Unbelievable. I'll tell you what, if this went bad and I couldn't repair it, then I would probably get another one of the same thing. It's a fabulous power supply. I don't have a backup power supply. If this thing went out, I'd be off the air. Go ahead, Marty. If not, Alan, you pick it up, the BA3 HVR.
Yep, I'm back. It was just a robocall. K2 KGF. Well, yeah, you mentioned the Collins gear not moving. Well, I have a friend. I'm not sure if he's still alive now. He was in his 90s last time I saw him, so he might have passed on. He'll remember his call, but he had an NC-183, a national receiver. I think it may have sold for a couple of $100 back in the 50s. He had one of the, he offered it to me, and I was thinking, I remember it. I couldn't recall exactly how big it was, but Bob, K2DDU, also a silent G. He had one that he picked up many years ago, and he mentioned it to me as of our contact. So I thought maybe I could add it to the shack. So I went over to my friend's house, and the damn thing weighs, I don't know, I thought 40 pounds. It was a ridiculous big box. So I declined the offer. I don't know what he did with it. I think he managed to give it away to somebody. But, that's the trouble with that old stuff. Aside from needing the space for it, you got to have a good back to be able to transport it. And I can understand why the market is what it is now. That stuff appeals to collectors. Alan, of course, is a great collector of gear. But Alan, you've got the space. That's very important. I suppose the great dwindling population of hams these days, the old timers usually move into these homeowner association deals and can't put up much of an antenna to start with, and usually don't have the space for the old boat anchors anyway. Things keep changing, and the newcomers to the hobby don't even know this stuff exists. That's about it. Looking around here, the only item here that's of any, not necessarily size, but of any significant weight is the AR-80D. I think it weighs about 35 pounds. which is about the maximum weight for moving it up and down my stairs in the basement. W3BZ and the group K2KGF.
Yeah, K2KGF. W3BZ. I get quite a kick out of discussing weight. I did move my 7851 around the other day, and that's off the shelf. Well, and I was cleaning up and so forth and moved it, and I realized how heavy it is. But the KW1 is 600 pounds, and one of my AM rigs, the modulation transformer and reactor alone, are over 500 pounds. That's not including the ventilator deck and the control deck and the RF deck. So I get a kick out of this weight. A lot of that stuff, though, even my KWS1's a gold disc, twins up on casters, the cabinets, the power supply cabinets, but it's still heavy. I don't know what the 75A4s weigh. I don't ever plan to get rid of all of my Collins gear. The A4, if I don't do anything with it other than just look at it, I'm going to keep at least one A4 probably until they put me in a box, and then my family can worry about what happens to it. But you're right. I mean, it's a lot easier to deal with some of this lighter stuff. Solid-state kilowatt is very, very light compared to even an SB1000 or 220 or the ALADP and that kind of thing. And and by the way, Dave, if you ever need an Astron power supply, get a hold of me because I am drowning in them. My son gave me back a power supply that I had loaned to him. It's a 30-amp Astron switching supply, and it's a featherweight compared to have the 35-ampere jobs. I've got the 50 M's. I have a pair of 70 amp. I've got the 35, the 50s, and the 70 amps. I've got a lot of them, which I've acquired over the years. And if your power supply craps out, I'll be happy to help you out. But it's amazing. I put the had a 50 amp, the metered Astron, which is a good power supply. They worked well. I had that on the Flex, and then this 30 amp solid state job is, and what, it weighs 5 pounds, something like that. So that really is the way to go, especially as we get older. And the NC-183, I had a 183D. I sold that. I still have a bunch of HRO-60s, which are really tremendous receivers. But you're right. The market has gone away. The market for a lot of that stuff is way down. What it used to bring 5 or 10 years ago brings, you're hard pressed probably to find anybody who wants any of this stuff other than as a gift. Very short money, as they say. It isn't, stuff just isn't that desirable anymore. But a lot of it's like an old friend. I've just turned the A4 on the other day, and I've got a nice big speaker on it, and it's a wonderful receiver, and I don't think I'd ever want to part with it. Not interested. The KW1, I think I can still find a good home for it. They do sell. There's a certain element that wants that. And for a lot of it, I think, for a lot of it, for me, was that things I always wanted as a kid and couldn't afford. And so when I was able to do it, I overdid it. Which is sort of my motto. Anything worth doing is worth doing to excess. WA3HVR, W3BB.
I like that. Of course, W.C. Fields had a little twist on that. He said, anything worth having is worth cheating for. Oh, my goodness. The WA3HVR. Oh, my. Well, boy, you are flush with power supplies. Well, if you want to offload one of those, I'll be happy to take it off your hands. I
would like to have a spare, because if this does go out, I'm off the air. I won't be able to tell you I need it. I guess I could email you, but no, this has been around for a long time. You know, I mean, there's not a whole lot to it. I'm sure it's repairable, unless the transformer is a problem, you know, but if the, it's past transistors and, some control circuitry, but I don't know. It's just a great, great power supply. Heavy as hell, I think, you know, for me anyway, but, what do I have? RS35M. That's what I've got here. So, I like that a lot. That's a winning piece of gear. So I'd like to put another one on the floor, and if there, you know, if you have an extra one of those, that would be of interest. Let's see, what else can I tell you about? I don't know. The more I think about all this future remoting and all that, by that time, you know, there'll be so many options that don't exist yet, and of course, the limiting factor is still the antenna. You know, I mean, if you can get some sort of reasonable antenna out, then the rest of it's easy. That's the problem, the antenna. And of course, there's certain immutable laws of physics when it comes to that that I don't think will be changing anytime soon. So that's the problem. So let's see, what else can I mention to you? I haven't been on FT8 for about a week. I'm starting to get withdrawal symptoms. I think I'm going to turn the computer on and do that. I did a complete image of the computer. I found a 2 terabyte hard disk, external hard drive. It's a rather old one. It was Western Digital, and I reformatted it. It works beautifully. It's kind of a big thing by comparison to what things are today, but it's a 2 terabyte drive. My son used it, and he had it, so that means it's probably 15 years old or 12, 13 years old. He's been gone 10 years, so it's at least, you know. And I reformatted it, and it has its own power supply. Most of them take USB power. So I plugged a little wall wart in and powered it, and I did an image, a Windows image of the hard disk on the, I'll call it Neil's computer, Marty. You know what that is, the computer in the shack that runs the radio. So that way, and I put it in an anti-static bag, put some rubber bands around it, and put it underneath the shelf here. So that way, if anything happens with this hard drive, I can be back in business, because it's not a computer I use for anything else. So I'm not going to be adding or subtracting, and there are no more updates on Windows 7, which is what it is. So and it's a 32-bit machine. It's not even a 64-bit, but it runs beautifully with Darren's software for the Flex. So that's all I need it for, you know. I don't need it for anything else, and I'm not going to get rid of it, because it works. And if it stopped working, you know, if it was just a hard drive, I would pop another hard drive and reinstall Windows 7, which I have on the CD. I have a CD-ROM of it. I'd reinstall Windows 7 and go from there and reload everything from the image. So that was good that I was able to reuse that. I was going to put a solid-state drive in this thing, and then the fellow that I know who does computer work, who's a neighbor and whatever, he said, don't waste your money. It's working great. Just keep it going. You know, that hard drive that's in, it's a good one. It probably will last a long time, and if not, we'll pop another one in there and go from there. So, you know, that's the way I'm doing it. And then another piece of news, we were supposed to go, we have plans to go away next April on a riverboat in Europe. And we made these plans back last October, and we're going to go with some friends out of Jersey that we met on this trip to Canada, to Calgary and the Canadian Rockies. And they just priced this trip yesterday, and they said if you don't want it, you within 2 weeks you notify us, and we give you your deposit back. So we looked at it, and I'm like, oh, my God, they went up like 25-30% over last year. I mean, I'm like, yeah, and this is euros, and the dollar is very strong. So I'm like, something wrong with this. So we said, we're not doing it. And I canceled it out yesterday, and, it was going to be like 18 grand for 7 days. I'm like, are you kidding me? that's too much. That was really crazy. WA3HVR, I think it's your turn, Marty.
Yeah, Roger, I got it. K2KGF. Well, yeah, that seems a little pricey for a short trip. We've seen those various cruise deals that seem crazy in terms of the amount of money. By and large, our experience has been with our cruising. Let me say, forget now which one we use mostly. It's the Dutch Holland America. I think those are good deals. Can't quote prices right now, but I think you've looked into them, Dave. They're pretty much a bargain, you know, considering what the daily rate is and what you get for it. I think they're pretty good. A nice way to go. But I have seen pricing on some other cruises. They're basically doing the same damn thing, you know, going to the Caribbean or whatever. Nothing really special. Being much more expensive. Now, I guess if you're a heavy drinker, you get into these deals where you have unlimited access, that might be worth spending the extra money. I know you can wind up drinking yourself into a real hole if you get on the more expensive wine programs and the hard stuff. That adds up. But aside from that, I thought Holland America was pretty good overall. Because once you're out in California, the go-to place is either, you know, going up to Alaska or going down the coast of Mexico or heading out to Hawaii. Because we've done them all from here. So I don't know. Anyway, you know, needless to say, I find the whole damn thing depressing, but I have mixed emotions about it. I'm hoping that the deal goes through right now because I'm tired of all this crap, turning my life upside down in anticipation of something happening. On the other hand, I would not be heartbroken if it falls through. We did have another bid. Very close, yeah, maybe 5,000 less. Those people had an offer, a significant down payment. I'm not sure why we picked this one, just because it was maybe a little bit more, maybe. I don't remember having it all to do over again. I think going for the big down payment deal was the better way to go. I'm not sure if that's still available. But in the meantime, we're waiting on the response from the other side. So let's see. I was going to say, Alan, yes, you've got a lot of shop equipment. That might be easier to move than the radio gear. Spot welders and all that kind of stuff. That always, I think, has a market. The heavy electronic gear, that's gonna cause you some problems, because wherever you go, you're going to need a lot of room. I would say hold off as much as you can. So you can no longer do the fencing or whatever else you have to do, the back 40, maybe that's the time to move. Then you'll have to find a home for all this stuff. W3BV and the group K2KGF.
K2KGF, W3BV. Well, part of the deal, too, is that I can
push some of the stuff off on my children. My son with the tools for my daughter's really into it. Very mechanical business.
It's a tool collector. She's got quite a shop.
She likes working with tools.
I've got some nice stuff, too.
And I've got to get my son has promised that he'll get active in ham radio as soon as he owns a house. He doesn't feel like where he is now. He's renting a place. Well, they're looking so that he can set up his station. But I can certainly fix him up with radio gear.
I'm going to enjoy it while I'm here, and then after I'm dead, if I croak before I move from here, then it won't be a problem.
Somebody else's problem, and I'm sure it won't concern me terribly much one way or the other. It turns out my daughter-in-law's father works for Collins Radio in Iowa. Of course, is the home of used to be. I guess it still is a big part of the Collins operations. And they just sent me a really nice Collins shirt. It actually says Collins Aerospace on it. So that's now part of Rockwell. Or maybe Rockwell sold it. I forget what the deal is. But anyway, he works for Collins Aerospace. So I have a nice Collins Aerospace shirt. Really very nice thing. So I still like Collins gear, and I'm really not worried about what it's worth or what I could sell it for, because a lot of it I don't really want to sell. The other stuff, the Hallicrafters gear, and I've got a couple of HT32Bs, by the way, which are very heavy transmitters, sideband transmitters, and the FX115 and the other stuff, but that was the top of the line, the Hallicrafters gear, and it really is nice stuff, and that's one of the things I'm going to do over the next few years is work on the gear, and that, you're right, Marty, when it gets to the point where I can't deal with the fences and the mowing and the other stuff I've got to do around here, then it'll be time to leave. It either gets to be too expensive or too burdensome, it'll be time to offload it, but I have had a good long run here. We've been here now 25 years, 26 years, and good long run, and I was able to put up all the antennas I wanted in the tower, and I probably would like to put up another tower, although maybe at this late stage it's foolish to do that, but I still would be able to play with antennas and enjoy radio and spend more time working on my gear, and then we'll worry about the rest of it. But we have a deposit actually on a living situation down there in Chester County, and that it will allow, I'm pretty confident given the open space, the amount of room they've got there, that I can put up a wire, which will work quite well. Who knows, maybe I'll convince them to start a ham club. But speaking of trips, we just paid the money for our Alaskan cruise. It's a cruise and train trip, and we're going on Holland American. That was recommended us by some people that do that frequently in Alaska. So we're here in June. We'll be taking a nice trip, and it's partially by land, by rail, and partially by boat. So I'm looking forward to that, and I won't have to worry about all this radio gear. Dave, I actually have one of the power supplies has a problem with it, and I was thinking maybe I haven't had time to look at it. Maybe Kurt would want to look at it, and that would certainly be a freebie, but whatever. It's a good power supply. I don't think it's a major deal, because I did talk to Astron about something else, and they have all those parts available. They get boards and the parts. It's not a major thing. Maybe I'll just fix the damn thing. Anyway, I have other supplies here, and actually quite a number of other supplies I've gotten. There is commercial supplies, which are very nice, too. It's the problem when you collect stuff for the course of, over the course of a lifetime, and then you come to the end of life and you're stuck with all this crap. I think the only decent thing to do is check out and leave the problem with somebody else. WA3HVR, W3PP.
WA3HVR. Well, that's certainly the considerate and thoughtful approach to it, but why start now with that? Oh, man. Okay. Well, if you, like I said, if you have a 13.8 volt supply that you have access to your whatever, and I would be happy to take it off your hands if you do. Let's see what else. I don't know. I think about an hour and a half is when the festivities begin here. And yeah, Holland America, I did look into that, Marty. That is a real discount operation in terms of what they give you. That's a market driven company in terms of what they provide. And this thing that we were going to go on was we've actually done trip already, exactly the same trip with a few little tweaks different, but everything 95% of it's identical. And we were just doing it because these people that we met, who we like, from New Jersey, on the trip to Canada, booked it and asked us if we were interested in going, and we thought yes. And of course, this was back last October, and they hadn't priced anything yet. And then when I looked at it, I'm saying, oh my goodness. And actually, the company we went on that trip with, different cruise line called UniWorld, another upscale company, their price is about $4,000 less for the same trip, with just a minor tweak difference. And yeah, they have all the liquor you can drink and wine and all that, and we don't do it. I mean, that's a waste for us. If I have a drink twice in the week, you know, it's a lot there. I don't drink at all here. So, I mean, it's like, you know, why pay for all those people that are spending their elbows, every minute? So I'd rather see some nice things. And I think what we're going to do, we actually talked about this.